Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are at stevejonesshow.com. I'm Sean Carey. Steve, in just a second, we'll check in from the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lots of ways you can get in contact with us. Our email is stevejones@wkok.com. You can also on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at @SteveJonesPSU. And you can subscribe to our free podcast. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Search Steve Jones Show. Drop the shows right to your smartphone and tablet. You can listen to them anytime, anywhere. And you can always get access of 3 months' worth of previous shows by going to our podcast archive page at stevejonesshow.com. So we'll be with you live until 5, late day news roundup at 5:06, and then we'll have Phillies baseball tonight. 6:35 will be the on-deck airtime, and first pitch at 7:10 from Flushing, as the Phillies now head to New York, take on the Mets for the weekend before the All-Star break, and both teams are entering tonight in the midst of skids. The Phillies absorbed another series loss last night. They squandered an early four-run first-inning lead and fell 12-6 to the Braves. The Mets had the day off yesterday after missing a chance at a two-game sweep against the Yankees. They lost on Wednesday by a score of 5-1. The Phillies have now fell to third place in the National League East for the first time this season.
Yeah.
With a record of 45-42. They're just a half a game out of a wild card spot, but right now, just the vibe is not all that good.
This isn't working.
No.
It should work. To be honest with you, it should work. There isn't a single move the Phillies made in the offseason I disagree with. How about that? Where I'm sitting there saying to myself, you know what? That's a good move. So far, it's, you can't fill every single need. You can't. It's hard to. I mean, there's only so much money out there. But this part of this is going to come down to this. I think the Phillies have had a good farm system. But guess what? The Braves probably have a better one. Right? The Braves have had higher draft picks. Dansby Swanson, of course, being a first overall pick. A guy like Acuna has been incredible. And their farm system's better. Right? I mean, the Braves have not been what you'd call wild spenders on the free agent trail, right? So in a lot of ways, they've just put together, part of it was forced, but they've got a better farm system. And it's proving out true with what they have, right? And the Phillies farm system isn't bad. I think where the Phillies farm system comes up a bit short is not in position players. I think the Phillies farm system comes up actually short in pitching. Quality pitching. I think that's where it comes up short, Sean. They have a lot of pitchers, And a guy like Nola, obviously, who was the first guy out of the gate here, and pitched so well on, what, Tuesday night? He was brilliant on Tuesday night, I thought. But there's also a bottom line, too, and the bottom line is he's one guy. They need to get more guys than that. And developing quality pitchers is not easy in your minor league system. Now, over time, I think the Dodgers have done that. Let's take the defending world champions, the Red Sox. They acquired Chris Sale in a trade. They acquired Rick Porcello in a trade. Eduardo Rodriguez, they acquired him in a deal with Baltimore long before he ever became a major leaguer. And they signed David Price as a free agent, and they acquired Nathan Eovaldi in a trade. So they traded for the vast majority of their staff. Now, some of their homegrown guys are like in the bullpen. Matt Barnes is a homegrown guy, people like that. That's how they did it. The Yankees have done some free agency, like Tanaka. Technically, Tanaka's a free agent. Right? CC was a, I think CC they acquired as a free agent. I think they signed him. Same thing. It's like with most franchises. I mean, how did the Astros get to be the Astros? Well, the Astros got to be the Astros because they needed one more piece, and that one additional piece was Justin Verlander, whom they acquired in a, yes, trade. So most franchises do not have long-term solutions in their minor league system. Normally, the contenders have to trade for them. And for the Phillies, they don't have long-term solutions in their farm system. Aaron Nola obviously was one and was terrific the other night. But it is, right now they're in, what, third place, you said?
That is right.
The Nationals passed them out?
Yeah.
You mean Bryce Harper's former team?
Yeah.
So Bryce Harper leaves the Nationals, and at this moment the Nationals are better? Is that good? Something tells me you're going to tell me no.
Correct. Phillies 1-6 in their last seven series to date back to June the 10th. They're just 8-14 in that span, and that ties the Brewers for the second worst record in the National League. So, another team that kind of...
And the Brewers, yeah, the Brewers are another one. Yeah. The Brewers are coming off a three-game sweep at the hands of the Cincinnati Reds. Have you seen how tight that division is? That division, five teams in it, are separated by 3.5 games. The Pirates, who have been hot, are actually still closer to last place than first place. They're 3 games back. The Reds are 3.5 back. The Cardinals are 1.5 back. And the Cubs and the Brewers are tied for first.
Most exciting division in baseball.
Or the, maybe instead of calling it the National League Central, we refer to it as the Pete Rozelle division. A lot of parity, but is parity equal mediocrity? I don't know. But did you see the wide-ranging interview with Bud Selig on The Athletic? Selig was talking about everything that, you know, that he went through as an owner and as commissioner. It was actually a wide-ranging interview. And, you know, obviously, you know, you're asked about mistakes and so forth. And he said, look, he said, The one thing he regrets, he thinks, is obviously the 94 strike. But when you've had labor stoppages in 72, 75, 76, 81, 85, I'm trying to think if 86 had a stoppage at all. 85 was brief. 81 was really long. When you had that many work stoppages, and then 94, they haven't had one since. But he says, look, it's obvious that, you know, that they've done damage to the game along the way. And now, they haven't had a work stoppage in 25 years. But that was so damaging that we still talk about it today. That's 25 years ago that that happened. He said, look, he said, you're not going to be right on everything. He said, I thought free agency would be the ruin of baseball. He said, instead, it's added a level of excitement to it. I mean, look at Philadelphia with the number of tickets they've sold this year. Some of that, not all of it, but some of it's traceable to the signing of Bryce Harper. What does free agency do? Free agency allows you to improve your club, but free agency also allows you to sell tickets because you've sent a message to your fans that you are trying. What's interesting is that I was listening to, now, the franchise that used to be the kings of free agency, they don't do as much free agency anymore, the Yankees. So I'm listening to this guy today saying, you know, at the Yankees, a lot of fool's gold right now. They have the same record they did a year ago, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I'm thinking to myself, what are you watching? Now, he was filling in for Michael Kay. And did you hear the story about Michael Kay?
Yeah, how about both Michael Kay and John Sterling the same week?
Now, John Sterling's 81.
Yes.
Okay, so let's start with that. John has a remarkable mark that was finally snapped of over 5,000 consecutive games without missing any games. 30 years, has not missed a game. The only time I met John Sterling one time, and it was not as the Yankees announcer. You know how I met him? He was in the Atlanta Hawks at the time. And they did an exhibition game in the Jordan Center. And John came in to do the game. It's the only time I ever met him. At least on that particular night, nice guy. Right? So he's 81. He says he's under the weather. So he took the four-game series with Tampa Bay off. Okay. Michael Kay, his vocal cords aren't right, I guess. From the strain of doing shows like this every day to trying to do baseball and all the talking. And he's going to be out a month. He sought out a specialist in Boston. They're going to do a surgical procedure on him. Wow. Wow. So back to the Yankees. So the guy filling in for him is saying, yeah, they're the same. They're not in the same spot as a year ago. Right? They're in first place. They're going to win the division. Hey, the Red Sox are the team that's not the same as they were a year ago. Okay, they're not. I mean, a lot of the same personnel, but they get going a little bit, then they tail, and they get going a little bit. Their bullpen hasn't been right all year. Right? They can't fill the last starting spot. I mean, Hector Velasquez went again the other night. The same Hector Velasquez that gave five runs in the game Dan and I went to in May, where the two of us like sat back for the last 8.5 innings with no hope. In fact, seeing that he was starting the game, we drove in not having a lot of hope. This isn't going to go well. Then when George Springer hit the first pitch of the game and tripled off the wall, we said, okay, let the carousel commence. But the Phillies did not do anything in the offseason I disagree with. Realmuto, great pickup. McCutchen, he gets hurt. Solid pro pickup. Signing Harper, huge. But the problem they have is they've got to somehow figure out a way to acquire some starting pitching. Well, that's an area where I think their system has betrayed them a bit. The pitching part of it. Not enough quality bullpen guys and another starting pitcher would really help them. I mean, Nola can stop some losing streaks, but boy, it'd really be great to have another arm there that can start a winning streak for you. We'll take a break. It's Friday of the 4th of July. You know what's a good idea, Sean? Stocking up at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Miller Lite, $12.95. Miller Lite, $12.95. Miller Lite, $12.95. Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Miller Lite, $12.95. Now that's what I'm talking about. Brewers Outlet has Miller Lite 24-pack cans for just $12.95. Get it? We got it. Pickles, ice, cigars, lottery, and all your beverage and party needs are a one-stop shop at The Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
All right, today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. How about these great specials? Miller Lite 24-pack, 12-ounce cans, only $12.95. Labatt, Labatt Lite, and Labatt Lime, 16-ounce, 24-packs, just $17.97. Seagram's Coolers, 12-packs, $10.99. In the 4th of July weekend, as far as we're concerned, is just barely underway. We still got three more days, including tonight. Enjoy it. Stock up. Imports, domestics, microbrews, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, second to none. Well, at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia with 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Joey Galino from Yahoo Sports is going to join us to talk about the Women's World Cup. They face the Netherlands Sunday at 11 with a whole ball of wax. And the King is on at 4:35, who has already told us point blank he is not rooting for the U.S. I was listening to Christopher Mad Dog Russo the other day. Same thing. He is not rooting for the U.S. They sense they're a little too brash for his taste. A little cup of tea after a goal. Okay. Probably not what I would do, but that's all right. Everybody's different. Look, just score some goals. Go from there. But yeah, they're a little, I guess for some people, a little too outspoken, a little too brash. Okay. I mean, it's like winning a state award and shoving it in everybody's face every 2 seconds. I mean, some, you know.
That happened here?
Oh, every day.
Really?
Number one. Number one, got no help. No help at all. I don't care how they celebrate. I don't care what they say in the press conferences. I could care less. You know, I just watch the games anyway, and then it's a U.S. team, so I want them to win. Simple, I mean, really that simple. I just want them to win. All right. So we're headed to the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to talk with Joey Galino about this and the level of play. I'll say this, for a team that has been noted for its offense for a long time, I think defensively they've come up pretty big during the course of this tournament. France had greater possession time. I believe England had greater possession time as well. And one senses that Megan Rapinoe will be able to play on Sunday. And it's at 11 o'clock. I guess we're having a watch party here at Panzer Stadium, the lacrosse stadium. Have you ever seen the video board in that stadium? That's the best video board I've ever seen. Deep, rich color, bright. Problem is I can see it on University Drive as I'm driving along, and I'll look at it thinking, hey, keep your eyes on the road. So Joey Galino, next half hour, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Including Miller Lite 24-pack, 12-ounce cans, only $12.95. Labatt, Labatt Light, and Labatt Lime, 16-ounce 24-pack, $17.97. They also have wine coolers, such as Seagram's coolers, 12-packs, just $10.99. Water soft drink snacks, they roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. United States national team plays for the World Cup title Sunday at 11 Eastern time. As they take on the Netherlands, Joey Gallino joins us from Yahoo Sports. Joey, welcome back. It's always great to hear you.
Thanks for having me back on. Glad to be here.
All right. Let's start with this. A lot of people, not a lot, but there's a segment of the population out there that doesn't like this team. They don't like the celebrations. They don't like how brash they are. Do you like this team?
I do, very much so. I'm cut from the cloth where, you know, if you don't want someone celebrating on you, don't let them score. I get that this team can come off as a little arrogant and a little brash. And, you know, Alex Morgan today, for example, said that her tea-sipping celebration was based on the idiom, that's the tea, as in, like, that's the talk, that's the gossip, instead of trolling England. Count me as a little dubious of that, but you know what? I didn't have a problem with it, and I think that while they can come off as brash, the truth is, you know, we ask for personality, for more personality out of our athletes on a routine basis as media, and then when we get it, you know, some people, not everyone, like to criticize it. So I'd rather err on the side of interesting, if you will.
Let me put it this way. I just rather they score. I mean, after that, yeah. I don't care what they do.
Right, exactly.
So I could care less about that. One thing, though, that's been noticeable in the last two outings, France and England, is that at times the field has been tilted against the U.S. The U.S. has always been known as a scoring unit. What have you thought of their defense and what they've done in the last couple of outings?
Well, that was the big question kind of coming into this. In the friendlies and the matches leading up to the World Cup, you know, it was clear the U.S. had a very potent attack, maybe as good as it's ever been for the national program, and the defense was going to be a little more suspect. And in these last couple of games, you know, the U.S. has scored inside of 15 minutes in all six of the World Cup games so far, and it's interesting, Thailand, who ended up losing obviously 13-0, is the team that kept them scoreless the longest. So they've been playing on the front foot quite a bit, and even though England came back to tie the score the other day and France pulled one back the other day as well, you know, the U.S. is sort of gotten that lead and then maybe changed the way they play a little bit. Some fans don't like seeing that, but because they'd rather them stay aggressive, but you know, you can't argue with results, I guess, at the end. But to the question about the defense, you know, I think they've proven a lot of the last couple of games, because the group stage wasn't really that difficult outside of Sweden. And then, you know, there was a couple errors that were one of them was against Spain that was pretty high profile. The U.S. got scored upon. And then, you know, obviously, like I said, France scored late the other day, about a week ago now, in the quarterfinals. But Alyssa Nair, Penn State graduate, I must say, who I covered in college, and the rest of the defense, she's a goalkeeper, the rest of the defense has done a pretty good job of staying with their marks and not making kind of the critical mistake and letting the team down. So I think they've proved a lot, and I think they have to feel confident going into Sunday.
And when you, it's the first time a penalty kick has been saved by the U.S. in a matchup in the World Cup. I mean, you have to know scouting report. You got to guess right. And she did everything on that play perfectly. It was the save of the tournament.
Oh, yeah. It was in Hope Solo, actually, the former U.S. goalkeeper, a lightning rod, if you will, at times. She has a column now that she writes over in England, and she noted that it was a good save. You know, they study tendencies as goalkeepers in the U.S. program. And, you know, she guessed right, Alyssa Nair did, and credit to her for that. And they're very well drilled in that regard. So, you know, it's almost like it's one of those things where you do all the homework before the moment, and then you just let the moment play out as it does. And that's what she did. And it was obviously, like you said, a huge, huge save and a big moment for this team.
Megan Rapinoe did not play in the semifinal in the victory. Was there any indication through the press conferences today about her availability for Sunday?
Yeah, they're expecting her to be good to go. It's not necessarily a situation where she could have played the other day if it was a final, but it was more of a little day-to-day thing. And frankly, tactically against England, it made more sense, because what the U.S. did against France, for example, their attack, the bulk of it, came down the left side, so Megan Rapinoe, their left side, so Megan Rapinoe didn't have to have as much defensive responsibility for the United States in that match, whereas England's attack came down the right side with Lucy Bronze and Nikita Paris, and that would have been the side where Rapinoe would have had to track back a little more. So if she wasn't fully fit, which by all accounts she wasn't, she didn't warm up before the game, and you know, definitely doesn't seem like she was healthy, then there's no reason to risk it. But they do expect her to be good to go for the final, and in a moment like this, you kind of get the sense the U.S. is going to need that kind of spark.
The video replay has played a role throughout the entire World Cup. What do you think of it?
I think it's a good thing overall, because, you know, there's a lot of hullabaloo about how it interrupts the flow of the game, and, you know, there's still some valid questions to be asked about what warrants a replay, what the threshold is of a violation for, you know, a replay look. And I think the one thing people aren't talking about as much is that it is getting a lot of the calls correctly, pretty much all of them. Like, you know, there's no question that the decisions after VAR have been made have been the right decisions under the letter of the law. Now, the whole issue, I guess, now is aesthetics, and people don't like the fact that you have a free-flowing, abstract game like soccer where there's no timeouts, obviously, other than maybe for water breaks if the heat warrants. You only get three subs the whole time. So it's really kind of on you as a coach and as a team, a staff, all that, to do your work before the match and then let things play out as they do. And VAR kind of interrupts that a little bit. So it's kind of ticking off a lot of the traditionalists. I think it does kind of jumble things a little bit, where you're robbed, you know, we were talking about celebrations earlier, you're robbed in that moment of being able to just let loose and really, you know, celebrate your goal or whatever you just did, because you're not sure. You got to look over your shoulder almost and see if, hey, VAR is going to, you know, take this away from me. I don't like that part of it necessarily, but I do think that because the success rate in terms of getting the calls correct is so high, that it's worth keeping around and worth massaging into the game even further. It's just, you know, the problem is FIFA did not test this at a major international women's event before the World Cup. So the teams have never had to deal with it. The players never had to deal with it. And you're kind of seeing some of the side effects of that in the controversy.
Joey, what did you think of the offside call against England that took a goal off the board?
Boy, it's hair tight. But I do think it was the correct call. And again, going down to the letter of the law, if you have any one of those little body parts that's ahead of the play when the ball is played forward, then you're technically offside. And I think, you know, on one hand, sure, it's a fine margin. And if that call went against the United States, I think myself and a lot of U.S. fans would be pretty upset. But at the same time, this is the best in the world. You know, this World Cup has been a showcase for how good the women's game is now and how much it's grown. And those are the margins we're talking about right there. And so I did think it was a good call, as frustrating as it must have been for England.
What makes the Netherlands a tough matchup for the United States?
I think there's a couple things. One is that there's a sense that this is not going to be as big of a challenge for the United States, because this side of the bracket that they just came out of was tougher. And frankly, I think that's true. I think that England and France are tougher opponents than the Netherlands. So one thing that you have to make sure is not baked into the United States is this idea of overconfidence or thinking they won't get a game from the Netherlands. I don't think that'll be the case. I think that they realize the challenge ahead. In terms of on the field itself, the Netherlands is really good at wearing you down. Like, they have a very good attack, and they have very talented attackers, and they're very versatile. They can interchange and play off of each other well. And they have a very physical midfield, and they scored a bulk of their goals at this tournament in the second half. And actually, it's kind of funny, until the stoppage, or the extra time goal, I should say, that got them to the final the other day, they'd scored all their goals in the knockout stage on set pieces. So you get a combination of the fact that you kind of wear the opponent down, and the opponent gets a little more tired, and maybe they lose their mark for a second, or they don't fight hard enough to get to that ball on a set piece, and the Netherlands will absolutely punish you. And that's what the U.S. has to be careful about. And the Netherlands isn't used to being down early. So I think, like we were talking about earlier, if the U.S. can get that early goal, you know, that might be a key, because the Netherlands, the more they hang around, the better they get.
Yeah, there's a bottom line. I know Jack Ham and I talk about this in football all the time. Dick Girardi and I talk about this in basketball all the time. I want to be playing with the lead.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what the United States does. You want to play with the lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to be said about, you know, Tiger Woods always got credit for this, and it's absolutely right. It's tough to play with the lead. It's tough to be ahead and maintain that hunger and that advantage. And the United States, you know, for what I said earlier about them maybe slipping into a little bit more of a defensive shell when they have the lead, the fact is that once they get it, they see it out. You know, like we've been saying, that's six games now they've taken an early lead, and six games they've won. So they know how to play with it, and they know what to do with it, and it's definitely a much better position to be in than being down early, right, and almost having to have that hunger and that fire lit under you in a forceful fashion, if you will.
And then there's the other part, too, to this that comes into play here. This is not a best of seven. The best of seven, right, the U.S. is going to win the series with relative ease. Okay, this is one.
One game. Yep.
They've got to win one game.
Right. And that helps in that it narrows your focus and your mindset, and it hinders in the fact that, you know, the U.S. could very well have a dominant edge in possession and chances and all that. And if Netherlands gets that one look, like, you know, they've got the talent to be able to convert it. And then all of a sudden, you know, the United States is in trouble. So, yeah, that's what makes these kind of things in the NCAA tournament and the NFL playoffs as well kind of fun. You know, it's the best team is the whole idea that the best team always wins these things. I'm not sure I ascribe to that when it's a format like this, because there's a very good chance that in that one game scenario, you know, the best team could be caught unlucky or unawares or whatever you want to say. So that's why it's so important for the United States to do what they say they've been doing and not take the Netherlands lightly.
What signs will you look for early on Sunday, Joey?
It's not even necessarily that the U.S. scores first. I think scores early, I should say. I think that's been a byproduct of what they've done. But the truth is, you know, they've looked lively. They've deserved those goals in pretty much every match. So if they've got that spark in their step and they're getting shots on net, you know, really early, then that's what you got to look for. Because the truth is, the Netherlands, because they grow into the matches, you don't always know if they've got their best game or maybe their C game. And they've fluctuated a little bit. For as good as their World Cup has been, you know, they've had some matches where they haven't looked as good as others, and you kind of have to wait to see how they look. The U.S. gives you an indication right off the bat. You know, if they're active, if they're making runs down the wings and trying to, you know, the other day we had Rose Lavelle nutmeg one of the England defenders right off the bat, like within 5 minutes. And, you know, when the U.S. has that kind of cocky spring in their step and they're using their skill, you know, they're putting it to good use, I think that's a great sign.
They haven't lost, so I'll preface it with this, but my final question will be, what kind of job, in your opinion, has Jill Ellis done?
She gets so much guff from the fans and even some of the media members, and the idea is that anyone could win with this level of talent, and it is true the United States has a hefty talent advantage. Of, for example, of the, you know, 23 players on England's team the other day, I'm not sure 10 would get selected for this U.S. Women's World Cup team. By the same token, you know, Jill Ellis makes, she's not afraid to make big decisions. You know, she benched Lindsey Horan, a couple games in the knockout stage, which was, you know, Horan might be the best all-around player on the United States. And, you know, she's done things that people haven't really liked tactically, but she gets the job done. And she's, you know, she won the World Cup with one draw and six wins in Canada 4 years ago, and she's on the verge of winning it, you know, with seven wins in seven games this time around. So I just, sure, you could probably nitpick even John Wooden if we really got right down to it, but at some point it's like, what's the point? You know, she's been fantastic for the program. The players like her a lot, and let's just enjoy the fact that the United States has such a great coach and is doing such a great job at these World Cups.
Joey, always an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
You bet, Steve. Thank you again.
Joey Gallino, Yahoo Sports, doing a great job covering the World Cup. The United States takes on the Netherlands Sunday at 11. It'll be on Fox. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. The U.S. Women's World Cup team will play Sunday against the Netherlands. That is the dominant story heading into the weekend. Now, the other part, too, is that the other part should be baseball. You know, the Phillies have got to, I think, have got to find some momentum going into the weekend here. They're going to have a lot of guys taking the several days off, so they should be well rested when they get back, including Bryce Harper. Like, there's a bottom line on Bryce Harper. And that's this. Bryce Harper is a very good player. A very good player. Bryce Harper is not a, quote, great player in some of the great names of all time. I mean, if you had a choice between Mike Schmidt and Bryce Harper, who would you pick? Well, obviously, you pick Mike Schmidt. I mean, home runs, hitting the clutch, third base. I mean, as fine a defensive third baseman as you're ever going to see. Harper works hard, plays hard, does not take his talent for granted, does hit home runs. Runs the bases well, is okay defensively, but he's a really, really good player. He's not a great, great player. Okay? He's not one of the top 50 players of all time. He's, you know, he's just really, really good. He's not going to be a guy that's going to go out there and hit 320 for you. With 45 home runs and 140 runs knocked in. He's going to be a guy that's probably going to hit between 260 and 280 when it's all said and done. Usually, he's probably going to hit between 30 and 36, 37 home runs. And he's going to drive in around 100. That's who he is. That's the way who he's always been. Same thing with Manny Machado. Manny Machado is a great player. Manny Machado is not a Hall of Fame player. Mike Trout's a Hall of Fame player. That's where, you know, I sometimes with certain individuals, they get overvalued based on name. And as a young player, Harper has done some really great things. But again, in reality, who is he? He's really good. You know, obviously, in 2015, he had a spectacular season. In 2015, he was great. He had 330. But he hit 270, 274, 273, 330, 343. Injury season of 111 games, he hit 319, and he's at 249, 252. He's a career 276 hitter. Hey, over 162 games, how many home runs a season do you think he averages on a 162-game average? 32. How many RBIs has he averaged on a 162-game schedule? 93. That's who he is. Okay? So right now, he is hitting, let's see, he's hit 16 home runs at 87 games. That's pretty close to what he would average for a season anyway. He's driven in 61 runs. That's actually a little bit higher than normally what he would average. And he's hitting 252, which is below his batting average. That's who he is. Sometimes we forget that like when you look at the guy's numbers, he is who he is.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.